Well, good afternoon. This is Dr. Stan here, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. We welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls. We have with us a very special guest this afternoon. His name is Dave Emery. And many years ago when I was the first getting started here trying to delve into what's going on, there was a woman in the Monterey Bay area. Her name was May Brussels. And May had done a lot of research, and she had a regular radio program. I was always a little bit envious because she really had so much information there going into the background that there really are forces working behind the scenes the American people are never allowed to know about. And for many years, she was a frequent feature on radio programs here in the Monterey Bay area and elsewhere. And then when May Brussels died, Dave Emery picked up her information and has been putting it out ever since then. He has a regular radio program here on the Pacific Coast once a week, but he has also been a guest on our program several times. We've had some amazing discussions, and we've gone into the background, for instance, of Operation Paperclip, where the CIA actively helped many of the Nazis escape to South America, including among them a man named Martin Bormann, who was the number two man in Germany after Hess had flown to England. And of course, the Nazi network was there, and the Nazi network still exists throughout the world today, but the average individual doesn't know it because of the degree of control that exists over the media. Dave, thank you so much for being with us today.
It's a pleasure, Dr. Stan, as always.
Well, now, do you want to talk about Martin Bormann? What would you like to talk about?
Well, you know what? I thought I'd leave that up to you.
This audience has never heard your discussion on Martin Bormann. And since there is a great deal of information you have, and we actually tracked down the book that you had suggested at personal expense, I might mention, I had to put out $250 to get the book because these books are actively suppressed. And the thought that our government would help these wicked Nazis, the followers of the wicked Adolf Hitler, sort of like the wicked Saddam Hussein today, but the wicked Adolf Hitler escaped to South America. Well, this is not our country, but there is a seed of darkness at the highest echelons of our intelligence agencies, and they did help Martin Bormann to get down there. And all I want to know is, why didn't the Simon Wiesenthal organization go down there and get him? The only one they ever got was Adolf Eichmann. And somehow that put it to rest, but it didn't, because they not only allowed them to escape, but their organizations are still intact today. So you pick up the story. And remember, this audience has never heard you before.
Okay, well, I'm going to do the best I can under the circumstances. It's not easy to swim upstream against the tide of disinformation. So I'm going to do the best I can. I'm also going to just issue a slight caveat to the audience on one thing. The last time I appeared on your show, Dr. Stan, something happened that does not usually happen to me. I have a lot of information at my disposal, and sometimes I will get a little bit jumbled in the presentation simply because in an attempt to lay it all out and to document what I'm saying, it can sometimes become a little overly complex, or I will jump a track to one line and traveled on another. But the last program I appeared on, last of the Radio Liberty broadcasts I appeared on, you absolutely flattened me with your discussion of the Project for a New American Century and some of the implications of what I consider to be the deliberate floating of that group, kind of like a fancy fishing lure that looks very bright as it bobbles in the waves, but once the unsuspecting researcher or citizen bites on it, it turns out to have very, very sharp hooks.
Hold on, thoughts, we'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and a special treat for you this afternoon, listening here in the Monterey Bay area and out across America. We have with us as a guest Dave Emery, and Dave is a researcher, and he has a phenomenal amount of information that he's gathered, not only from his research, but carried over from Mae Brussels, but he's picked up and run with that, and you'll be wanting to get into his website, because a tremendous volume of information you're not going to find elsewhere, and it's all carefully documented from multiple sources, some of which I know, some of which I didn't, but I've been fascinated to pick up some of the books that he suggested, and of course it helps to put the dots together. So without further ado, Dave, thank you so very much for being with us today.
Oh, it's a pleasure, and again, I was in a sort of a characteristically long-winded introduction. The last time I appeared on your program, I was absolutely flattened by your discussion of the Project for a New American Century, and I almost willingly surrendered the reins of broadcast control because I wanted to speak with you about that. So for those listeners who might have been tuned in, a very qualified apology, and that's a great compliment to you, Dr. Stan. It isn't I'm something of a political graybeard, and I've seen an awful lot, and the whole floating of the Project for a New American Century gambit, which is what I considered it to be, smelled very fishy, extending the fishing metaphor that we touched on earlier from the beginning. And I think you hit the nail right on the head, and I was just really amazed. But now let's talk about Martin Bormann. Let's try to place this in the context of some of the things that are going on today. And I'll leave it to your directorial executive authority, Dr. Stan, to sort of pull the levers where you think things need to be tightened up, or to give me a little more line, so to speak. Again, perhaps mixing the fishing metaphor in there. Let's go back to the to World War One, and let's think of the term networking, because a lot of people think of conspiracy, and right away, whether they're mainstream or whether they're from the political left or the right, it just tends to be so easy to say, "Oh, I don't believe in conspiracy theories," and it becomes a sort of an empty chant or a mantra that people can escape. It's almost like a Romanian peasant hanging a clove of garlic in the window to keep away the vampires. It won't really change anything, but it's a form of superstition. So people say conspiracy, and then they go, "Oh, I don't believe in conspiracies." Let's think of two things that people are much more familiar with, and that I think have a lot of relevance. Think of money, in particular big money, and let's think of networking. Also, a couple of other terms that people are familiar with. Think about the phenomenon of globalization.
Before you go on, we're going to have to bring one more station back on with us, and then we'll have all of our network together. So hold that thought. Sure. Let's bring them on. Okay, Dr. Stan back here with Dave Emery, and we're talking about this idea of conspiracy and how most people poo-poo the idea. But what Dave is pointing out is that there is a process of networking, and he wants to take not just to the Second World War and Martin Bormann, but going back to the First World War, and this idea of networking of groups, especially people of great wealth and great power. And we've seen recently with the exposure of the corruption within the mutual fund industry, where many of the people working within that were taking the clients' money and using it for their own benefit, how many of the mutual funds were allowing preferred customers to get into PROs, I think, or whatever it was, the stock releases before they were put out for the public, letting them trade after hours. They are paying hundreds of millions of dollars for violating the law. They were conspiring against their customers, but of course the money is not going to go back to customers. It's going to go into the coffers of the government, which worked with these great corporations. So you pick up the story there, Dave.
All righty. Well, at the end of World War One, think about globalization, the phenomenon that people have now become somewhat familiar with. It's actually older than most people are aware of. And think also of regulation and the way in which big business struggles against that. You just cited the mutual fund industry, and that's something of a microcosm, where very, very powerfully wealthy people are able to completely skirt the laws that apply to thee and me, so to speak. Little folks cannot get away with breaking the rules, but big folks can get away with breaking the rules because they pay the people who make the rules and enforce them. That sounds a little cliched, but let's take a look at the way the world was at the end of World War One, and think of networking, think of globalization, and think of regulation and the struggle against that. Now, in World War I, basically, the entire industrialized world, for all practical purposes, committed suicide. World War I could be thought of as a 19th century or 18th century aristocratic duel fought at 50 paces with machine guns, heavy artillery, poison gas, airplanes, and submarines. And the result was quite predictable. The finances of the major powers of Europe were destroyed in order to help finance the purchase of the engines of war. The ruling monarchies that had governed Western and also Eastern Europe for centuries collapsed. And the industrial labor forces of all of the major industrial countries were slaughtered. Basically, all of the people that they had to produce goods and services were dead or else crippled. The loss of life in World War I was astounding, and it was young, able-bodied men that took the brunt of it.
About 21 million people died and probably twice that many injured in that senseless, senseless war.
And it's a war that I think in many ways precipitated World War II, and I think it also has had much to do with the spiritual demoralization of what has taken place today. If I could ask you, Stan, to just bookmark that last thought, and we'll come back into that, because I think that has played a role that is echoed through the decades, because with World War I, with the established order, the old order, so to speak, in Europe and the rest of the civilized / industrialized world, having followed its dictates and having had its principles exercised to the maximum, and having had that in turn result in slaughter, just millions of corpses. Men who were in the trenches in World War I describe having seen comrades in arms that they had seen killed suddenly apparently come to life in the middle of the evening. Well, that was because the rats had grown so big and so hungry that they could actually turn over corpses, as they said, on the flesh of the dead. That and just the destruction and the demoralization that took place in that, I think, had a profound effect on the rest of the world. Much of the sympathy for fascism, much of the heroic/pessimistic ethical philosophy that in some ways spawned Hitler, and I think could also be seen as a major contribution to the rise of Bolshevism, came from the demoralization of watching what happened in World War I. But economically and politically, England, France, and Britain were bankrupt. The Russian Empire under the Romanovs collapsed. The Austro-Hungarian Empire, aligned with the Central Powers, with Germany, collapsed. The Hohenzollern dynasty in Germany collapsed. And beyond that, all of those countries were in debt. Well, the United States had been the world's, had become, in World War I, as a result of that, the world's major creditor nation. The U.S. became, U.S. financial industry became very powerful through lending to the warring powers of Europe. Recall, the U.S. didn't enter that war till 1917, but all of the warring powers of Europe were making a lot of money for American financiers, because they were basically borrowing to pay for the tanks, the airplanes, the cannon, the coffins eventually, although I might imagine they got those pretty cheap. And, at the same time, because the U.S. entered the war so late, its industrial labor force was still largely intact. We still had healthy, strong young men to make automobiles and goods and services. So in the 1920s, in the wake of World War I, the United States experienced a tremendous industrial and financial boom. We were the world's biggest creditor nation. We still had an intact labor force. Our young men were still alive. They weren't all dead. They weren't all shot to death in the trenches. And beyond that, there was a technological boom, the advent of radio, which could be compared quite precisely, I think, and analogously to the boom that the Internet produced in the 1990s. This was a marvelous new technology, and it was seen as, correctly, revolutionizing human political and social affairs, and it resulted in a huge speculative boom in the stock market. So what you have is you have the U.S. financing the powers that destroyed themselves in World War I. It still has an intact labor force, and it's experiencing this tremendous industrial boom, topped by a speculative boom in the 1920s. a lot of people are getting very rich in this country.
But don't you think the Federal Reserve System that was able to create money out of nothing and massively increase the monetary supply played a significant part in the artificial prosperity that we experienced during the roaring 20s, as it were?
It did, and beyond that, the simple phenomenon of finance that didn't have to be paid back. And I'm gonna try to tie an awful lot into a very small package here, or a tidy package. So bear with me, Dr. Stan, and again, you tighten up the reins or pull the levers. What do you think it needs to be done?
You run with it. We've got about 4 minutes before the next break.
Okay, the people who are making a lot of money, including people on both sides of the Atlantic who were involved in some of these business deals, particularly Americans, did not want to put up with the regulation of business that they felt to be hindering of the profits that they could make. Here the United States is experiencing a tremendous industrial boom, but because of the Antitrust Act that had been passed under Theodore Roosevelt, it forbade the establishment of monopolies. Well, there was a loophole in the Antitrust Act called the Webb-Parmalee Act, which did not prevent powerful American industrial and financial interests from hooking up with their counterparts abroad to create what are known as cartels. This isn't a term that people hear a lot, C-A-R-T-E-L. It's an international monopoly. So to escape regulation in this country, these powerful Wall Street financiers and industrialists, including members of the Bush family, George Herbert Walker and Prescott Bush Sr., the great-grandfather and grandfather, respectively, of the current president, were among those who engaged in business deals with some of the industrial and financial elite of Germany, Italy, and Japan. And they did this to escape regulation. So think of the United States perhaps as the body of an eagle. There's a tremendous economic boom going on. But instead of reinvesting the profits from that boom into the American industrial infrastructure, they're investing instead with Japan, Germany, and Italy. This helped to produce the Great Depression in the U.S. because instead of investing capital in such a way as to generate more capital, the capital was invested in pre-Nazi and Nazi Germany, fascist Italy, and imperial Japan. The forces that sprang out and fell upon Europe and Asia and later the United States like a predatory beast was the transmogrified economic power of the American industrial boom of the 1920s.
But much of this was financing Adolf Hitler, and I think this is the hardest thing for people to accept. I have a letter I found among Colonel House's papers back at Yale University from Ambassador Dodd to Colonel House back in 1936 saying, why are American corporations building up the German war machine? We just got through with this terrible war. Nobody wants another war. The American corporations can't get any money out of Germany because the exchange controls. The people back at home know that they're building up the war-making material here and investing in this country when they can't make a profit. And he was quite just overwhelmed by the fact that American corporations, 100 of them, were there working, building up the war machine at that time in 36 for Adolf Hitler, the war machine that would be used just a few years later to slaughter American soldiers.
Same thing was true, by the way, in Japan. I haven't spent as much time on that because there isn't as much information, but two great books. One of them has just come out on sale. One is called The Yamato Dynasty. Yamato is Y-A-M-A-T-O by Sterling and Peggy Seagrave. They're husband and wife, S-E-A-G-R-A-V-E. And they've just released a new book this past fall, Dr. Stan, to make a great holiday gift for anyone that wants to consider this. It's called Gold Warriors. And it's about the Japanese looting of Asia in World War II, which took place with the assistance of their investment partners who came from the United States, and how they looted all of occupied Asia, and then they stashed the loot from that plunder and used it to finance the Japanese economic recovery after World War II. The same thing happened in Germany. And after the break, Dr. Stan, let's talk about what happened in Germany and how this ties in with Martin Bormann and how this relates to the events of today.
The book, Yamato, what was it?
It's called The Yamato Dynasty.
Now, where does the Gold Warriors fit?
Gold Warriors, there's a website. It's, I believe, Verso Books. Again, Sterling and Peggy Seagrave. There's a website about it. And three programs real quick, Dr. Stan, that I have.
We're going to take a break. We'll have to do that when we get back.
Fantastic.
Have you ever wondered what the Vietnamese War was really all about? Why America, the most powerful nation in the world, spent 10 years fighting in Southeast Asia against a nation the size of the state of Mississippi, and America lost that war? Do you really believe that happened by accident? There's so much to the story of Vietnam that the American people have never really known. And in our four-tape set, Vietnam, the Untold Story, you're going to get the information that you need to understand the tragedy of that event. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and ask for Vietnam, the Untold Story, the story of what really happened in Vietnam that has been suppressed from the American people for the last 20 years.
Hello, garlic lovers. This is Radio Health journalist Bill Sardi to talk to you about a breakthrough in garlic technology. It's called Alamex. You know all the healthy reasons to take garlic, but isn't it time you got your money's worth? A recent study found the 24 leading brands of garlic pills provided little, if any, allicin, garlic's primary active ingredient. Try Alamex, which is the only odorless garlic supplement to provide pure allicin, a full 180 milligrams. That's the power of 15 fresh cloves of garlic. Alamex isn't available in stores, so call 866-405-4000. That's Alamex at 866-405-4000.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and I want to tell you about a couple of things we carry, because other things we carry here help us to stay on the air. One of them is the Big Berkey water fillers and the Berkey Life water fillers. And if you, are concerned about the always having access to potable water, if you like to go camping, or maybe just for an emergency, it's great to have. A lot of people like to drink bottled water today. Well, you don't need bottled water. That you can get water that you put through a Berkey water filler, and you'll remove the most of the heavy metals and the pesticides and the herbicides and the bacteria, and clean up the taste of the water, get the chlorine taste out of it. The Berkey water filter is a standard. It's been used for 150 years by missionaries throughout the world. You put a couple of gallons in the top chamber. It's stainless steel. It goes through the ceramic filters, packed with activated carbon. Comes out the bottom, and it's potable, and people love the taste of this. And it's, I know one of our listeners bought the one for his son, for the fraternity house where all these boys live. Instead of buying all the bottled water, while they're using the water out of the filter, they put it in containers. They just love it, the taste of it. Now, the Big Berkey is $239.95 plus shipping. It's available in every state but Iowa and California. Don't ask me why, but those are the rules, and we have to abide by them. So if you want to get a water filter, you can get the Berkey Light. The Berkey Light is made of Lexan, so you can actually see the water level. The filters are, we call black Berkey filters. They're really more efficient than the traditional filters, but they have to be replaced every couple of years. And this is $199.95. Now, neither filter will take out the fluoride or take it out well. There are special filters that you can put on the bottom. They're called post filters. And if you're concerned about fluoride or arsenic in your water, why, the post filters will take care of that. But they have to be replaced every 6 to 8 months. So you can see these pictures of them at our website at RadioLiberty.com. If you buy them from us, you get either a four-tape set or a video that we produced. So give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and ask for the Big Berkey or the Berkey Light. You'll be happy to do. Well, Dr. Stan back here. Our guest this afternoon is Dave Emery, and we're talking about the background of what was going on in Germany as the American corporations were involved in building up Adolf Hitler. And, of course, the same thing, according to David, was going on over in Japan, and I wouldn't be at all surprised. In fact, I believe that many of the great Japanese corporations today have strong ties to American corporations, and many of their automotive companies are really owned by American automotive companies. But the average American doesn't understand that any more than they really understand that you can have the same corporation putting out a number of different cars, all competing with one another, at least as far as the individual is concerned, but it's all showbiz. A few corporations control most of the automotive production in the world. So pick up the story there, Dave.
Absolutely, Dr. Stan. You're spot on about that. And not only that, but we can think in terms of what's going on today, of the automobile industry as in turn being part of a larger industry, because obviously they run on oil, they run on gasoline, so the relationship between the automotive industry and the fossil fuels business, oil business in particular, and in turn steel. What are cars made out of? Steel. These are three industries that are inextricably linked, and there is a lot to be learned. Yes, absolutely. The corporations, let me jump back and see if I can use a joke, Dr. Stander, perhaps illustrate this paradigm that I'm developing. Again, think of the United States as a body of an eagle, but think of the wings as being the money that was invested in the 1920s and 1930s in fascist Italy, or Nazi Germany even more, and also in Imperial Japan. The power that swept over Asia, the devastating force that the Japanese employed on Asia and that the Germans and to a lesser extent Italians employed in Europe, was basically the transmogrified economic power of the American industrial boom of the 1920s. Then what they did, what the Germans and Japanese did, was to use their military conquest to loot all of the wealth of occupied Asia and Europe. And in turn, both the major German corporations and the major Japanese corporations had ongoing cartel agreements with their American counterparts. Indeed, in 1934, there was an attempted coup in the United States. Some of these same people were so disillusioned with Franklin Roosevelt that they commissioned Smedley Butler, a United States Marine Corps general, two-time winner of the Congressional Medal of Honor, to lead a military coup against Franklin Roosevelt to overthrow him and set up a fascist government in the United States. It was actually a congressional committee, the McCormick-Dickstein Committee, chaired by former Speaker of the House from Massachusetts, Representative John McCormick. And when World War II took place, the Germans conquer Europe, the Japanese conquer Asia, and they use this conquest, effected through the transmogrified economic power of the American industrial boom in the 1920s, which had been channeled to them by their American investment partners, and they use it to loot all of Asia and all of Europe. Now, we're going to tie in Martin Bormann in just a second. Martin Bormann was Hitler's nominal number two. My feeling, Dr. Stan, is that Martin Bormann was the real power behind the throne all along. He was an organizational genius, one of the few people able to master the Byzantine Nazi hierarchy and bureaucracy, and he was a master conspirator. He was very far-sighted, very determined, very ruthless, extremely dangerous, and gradually he became the fellow who was the top dog, so to speak, in Nazi Germany as Hitler's star faded. And he hooked up with General Heinrich Müller of the SS, the head of the Gestapo, the deadly, feared German secret police, which were an extension of the SS. And what they did was to put together an underground Reich, literally a Third Reich that went underground, rather like the Mafia. Listeners maybe have seen the Godfather movies. They begin at the end of World War One. The Al Pacino character comes home from, or excuse me, they begin at the end of World War II. The Al Pacino character comes home. He has served in the military, and he then moves into the structure that has operated throughout the war, this deadly, sub rosa, but very powerful mafia structure that existed in the United States. Well, we can think of the underground Reich, and also their Japanese counterparts, as being basically a super international political mafia based in Germany, and also based in Japan. And the amount of money that the Germans looted from occupied Asia, leaving aside what they already had, was estimated by British intelligence to be $143 billion in early 40s dollars. That would be trillions of dollars today. The Japanese did something very similar. The amount of money that they had stashed just in the Philippines in huge underground vaults for gold, silver, and jewels was estimated at $100 billion in 1940s dollars. Using these sums of money, the Japanese and German investment partners with the American elite, I believe, gained the upper hand in the post-World War II markets, and I think that's part of the story that we're looking at today, and after the break, we can develop this further.
Have you ever wondered what really happened if Waco? Have you ever wondered if maybe the government was not giving you the full story. Well, there was the most amazing video. It's called Waco, the Rules of Engagement, 2.5 ripping hours of the story of a government onslaught under a group of peaceable people. Now, their religion may be different than yours and mine, but they were still Christians, they still believed in the Bible, and they believed that the government would one day become their enemy and destroy them. Well, Waco, the Rules of Engagement is a video that everybody who loves freedom should see, because the ultimate conclusion is the government did not want them to come out. The government did everything they could to keep them from coming out, to antagonize them, loud music, lights all the time, to totally create a situation where they could not think clearly or respond normally. Waco, the Rules of Engagement, is currently unavailable at the regular sources called on 800-5-HIV-WAR right now.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. Let me tell you about a few of the other things we have here at Radio Liberty. One of them, the Miracle 2 soap products, and we've used those products now for two and a half years, my wife and myself. And I will tell you, I wouldn't be without the moisturizing soap, because it really, I got away with a lot of that scaling around the elbows and rashes that I had. Now, we can't tell you it's going to work for you. We can only tell you that a lot of people claim that it does, and great for acne, great for all sorts of things. My wife uses the Miracle 2 soap for cleaning counters and for cleaning all sorts of things, and she really swears by this. She takes the neutralizer, and she has an acid reflux, and it seems to help her. A lot of people claim it does. All we can do is tell you to try it and see. It's a very alkaline solution, and of course she doesn't have to take anywhere near as many of those very expensive medications that she was having to take before. We can tell you nothing about the Miracle 2 soap products other than they work, and if you'd like to try them, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927 for an introductory offer, or go to our website at radioliberty.com where you can actually see them. And then we also carry the Phenopoly, and it's a program aimed to teach you, your children, and your grandchildren how to read and spell and pronounce words phonetically. Phenopoly is a great program because in 16 hours you can undo all the harm that's been done to the mind of your children by the government schools that have intentionally dumbed them down and taught them a method of reading that's not used in any other countries. Why? Because other countries want their children to excel. And we're pushing mediocrity here in the United States, and it's been done intentionally. Phenopoly, well, most of these programs that will teach you how to spell and read and pronounce words are $300, $400, $500, $600, $800. This is $139.95. That's $139.95. It's called Phenopoly. It's 5 board games, 2 bonus games, and of course we throw in a couple of books. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And again, that telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR if you want to reach our ministry and get more information. But our guest this afternoon is Dave Emery, and he's talking about how these fabulous amounts of money were looted by the Japanese from the South Pacific, by the Germans from Europe, and how it is his feeling that much of this money was used then for post-war domination. And there's a wonderful book we have. You can hardly get it. It's called The Secret Agenda. It's written by Linda Hunt. It's a story of Operation Paperclip. Now, you're supposed to believe, of course, we took care of all those nasty Nazis that are at Nuremberg. Well, that's what you're supposed to believe, but the CIA, the OSS, actually helped them to escape to South America, and this comes from many sources, and they set up operations in South America, and that's where, of course, Adolf Eichmann and Martin Bormann and Dr. Mengele and Klaus Barbie and so many of these other people went. And, well, if this is really true, why didn't we go after them? Well, because it's all show business. It's all perception. We have to make the American people really believe that we really wanted to get all those nasty Nazis. But as you begin studying this, you realize that the same dark spiritual forces that energized the Nazi movement, which was the occult, were also energizing people at the upper echelons of the American and British governments as well. So you pick up the story from there, Dave.
Dr. Stan, what basically happened was, I guess one could say, was business as unusual. While the citizens of the United States and then the other democracies were fighting and dying to preserve democracy against fascism, At the same time, because of the relationship that I've already been talking about, these powerful corporations in the United States and with their counterparts in Germany and Japan basically maintained the international status quo. And again, in order to escape regulation in the United States, and because the U.S. was the only intact financial power and the only intact industrial power, we experienced a huge boom in the 1920s, but many of the powerful Wall Street elite did not want to be subject to regulation, so they invested abroad. Basically, this was globalization, what we now call globalization. And they invested in Germany, Japan, and to a lesser extent, Italy, and the transmogrified wealth of that boom surged over Asia in the person of the Japanese armed forces. It surged over Europe in the person of the in the presence of the German armed forces, and they conquered all of Asia and all of Europe. While in possession of Asia and Europe, Japan and Germany looted all of occupied Asia. The money looted from and occupied Europe. The money looted from occupied Europe, estimated by British intelligence at in excess of $140 billion in early 40s dollars, not including what the Nazis took from Greece and the former Soviet Union, which was considerable. And in Asia, the Japanese for decades had been looting Asia in combination with the Zaibatsu. That's a new name for your listeners, Dr. Stan. Those are the giant family trusts that have controlled Japanese industry and finance for decades. The name Zaibatsu, they were later renamed Keiretsu for public relations purposes. That's a new one, but if we start going into the names of the Japanese Zaibatsu, they're only too familiar. Sumitomo, Mitsubishi, Mitsui, Nissan, these are the names we see today. We could think of what took place in the 20th century. Think of the United States again as an eagle, with the United States proper being its body. And then think of the Wall Street elite investing in Japan and Germany in order to escape regulation. Then World War II takes place, and the Japanese and the Germans, with their own agenda, loot all of occupied Asia. The Japanese have all the liquid capital in Asia. The Germans, under the deadly Martin Bormann, having gone underground and established a deadly, powerful international mafia, using not only the tremendous wealth that they had, but their connections with the Wall Street elite, in particular the Bush family, and using the political and intelligence power that they derived from the incorporation of the Nazi intelligence apparatus into the Central Intelligence Agency and into our defense industries. We took General Reinhard Gehlen, many of the top SS officers. We took Wernher von Braun. He's known as the father of the American space program, but as you know from Secret Agenda, Dr. Stan, the book you alluded to earlier, Wernher von Braun was far more than the father of the American space program. He was not only a war criminal who fired V-1 and V-2 rockets into the United Kingdom, killing many citizens, he also was an officer in the SS. So when we talk about the SS, we're not talking this about something that took place a long ago and far away. We're talking about something that has implications for today. But now think of the wings of this eagle, this global eagle that I've spoken about, as being the Japanese and the Germans. But while in possession of occupied Europe and occupied Asia, they loot occupied Europe and occupied Asia, presenting the United States at the end of World War II with a sort of a two-pronged crisis. Those two crises could be thought of as economic liquidity and the viability of capitalism from a maintenance standpoint, and the fact that the Japanese and the Germans, although their armies were defeated on the battlefield, had actually won the war from an economic standpoint, because all of the liquid wealth of Asia, all of the liquid wealth of Europe was in the possession of the Japanese and the Germans. So in order to continue to do business globally, these powerful American corporations grouped around the Morgan Group, involving the Bush family, the Morgan pilot fish, so to speak.
Don't forget the Rockefellers, of course.
Oh, the Rockefellers are at the very core of this. The Mellon family, too,
right,
Dr. Stan.
Right.
People hear about the Rockefellers, but they don't hear about the Mellons. They're tremendously powerful people.
Right.
just tremendously powerful. Perhaps sometime in a future show we can go into that. But what we had at the end of World War II is a situation where our high-rolling industrialists and financiers, the Morgans, the DuPonts, the Rockefellers, the Mellons, the Fords, the Bushes, have basically placed the United States in a position of economic relationship in a fundamental way with fascist Japan and Nazi Germany. They have gone underground, taken off their uniforms, talking about the Japanese and the Germans now. They've taken off their uniforms, but they're perpetuating the same ruthless, bloody political agenda that they had when they wore their uniforms. And the United States is now locked into the beginnings of the Cold War. We've got the Soviet Union, very soon to be joined by China. So in order to maintain liquidity, to maintain the international financial system, and to maintain Japan and Germany as geopolitical bulwarks against communism, the status quo was maintained. The same Nazis and fascists that had run Hitler's regime were put back in power in Germany. They were made an inextricable link of the inextricable element, a very important element of the CIA. They were incorporated into the American defense industry. The same thing happened in Asia. The Japanese fascists took off their uniforms and were employed as anti-communist cadre. One of the many fascinating details, one of the things that provoked China into the arms of the communists was the fact that the U.S. in China after World War II used the Japanese, who had committed unspeakable horrors against the Chinese. The number of Chinese killed in the Asian Holocaust is put conservatively at 20 million. The Chinese themselves put it as high as 35 million. And Dr. Stan, I'm going to ask you to bookmark the subject of the rape of Nanking. Time permitting, we can go into that. But in northwest Manchuria alone, there were 7 Japanese divisions that were maintained fully armed in uniform to guard the railway system against the Chinese communists under Mao Zedong as late as 1947, basically. This is a tremendous force. It's perhaps 70,000 Japanese combat troops. That's just in northwest Manchuria. Now, in addition to the perpetuation of these political relationships, which are completely antithetical to American democracy, remember that from an economic standpoint, the whip hand was at this point being held not by the United States, not by the Mellons, not by the Rockefellers, not by the Morgans, the DuPonts, the Fords, and the Bushes. They had put the carriage together, and they had embarked upon this road, but because the Japanese and the Germans basically looted all of Asia and all of Europe, they had the money in the accounts. Martin Bormann secreted this money into corporate fronts in neutral countries such as Switzerland, Argentina, Spain. Turkey was a major recipient of the Nazi monies. And the Japanese brought, well, as much of it as they could back to the home islands, and the rest they stashed abroad in occupied Asia. The Philippines was the largest of these stashes. Two books, Dr. Stan, and 3 programs that listeners can either read about and or listen to on Real Audio. I do a series called For the Record. For the Record 426 is taken from the book The Amato Dynasty, and it talks about how the Wall Street elite put their Japanese counterparts right back in business in Japan after World War II. They basically continued the relationships that existed before.
Now, before you go on, for our listeners who do not know, Dave has an excellent website. It's called Spitfire List, and when he refers to 426, he's referring to a specific program there, 426. So if you want to go to, it's Spitfire List, isn't it? Is Spitfire List.
Yes, it is. Spitfire List, www.spitfirelist.com. That's one word, SPITFIRELIST.com. And there are long, detailed, annotated descriptions of these programs available because some listeners find this kind of stuff difficult to listen to for a long period of time. There are links to real audio files maintained by an East Coast station. WFMU.org/Dave Emery has these programs. And this, by the way, is all free, Dr. Stan. I'm I'm probably going to starve to death because I do all this work for free, but I didn't think I was going to live this long. Paul Revere, you know, when he took his ride, he didn't do it with syndication rights and royalties in mind. He just said, hey, the country's in trouble. Thank you.
Thank you.